At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi everyone, welcome to Talking in the Rain. My name is Sara Udju, I am your host, and today my guest is Corey Payet. He's going to be introducing himself in just a second, and before we get into the interview, I want to let you know that the Transform Festival will be happening from November 6th until the 9th, and you can get your tickets at transformfestival.ca, and keep listening to learn more about the festival and Corey himself. Enjoy.
Thank you so much for joining me, Corey. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience, talk a little bit about who you are, what you do, and then we can get into it?
Yeah. Ani, Corey Dishnikas. My name's Corey. I'm a member of the Mattagami First Nations in Northern Ontario and also French Canadian and Irish. And I live on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations in East Vancouver. I'm a playwright, composer, lyricist, a storyteller, and also a director. And specifically for the Transform Festival, I'm a co-curator of the festival and also have a number of different hats that I wear as part of each of the performances, whether that's as a director, certain ones I'm also writing, and then other ones I'm singing and hosting music. So it's a wide variety of activities. So it's that's kind of what I am. But ultimately, I think of myself as a storyteller and trying to create social change through artistic work.
Cool. And your work is known for inserting Indigenous perspectives and creating conversations. So was this your goal when you first started your artistic journey, or has it shaped into what it is today throughout the years?
I don't think that it always was my path. So I started as a songwriter and writing songs when I was a kid, and singing and performing as a young person in choirs, and also in musicals. Worked as an actor for many years. So back in when I lived in Toronto, and also in much of my time on the West Coast here, worked as an actor. And then over the years, I started to be frustrated with those, like the opportunities, and that I felt like the stories that I was being offered to tell, you know, through mostly in large scale musicals, I just felt like I didn't connect with them. I felt like they weren't telling the stories that were important to me. And there's nothing against them. They're wonderful commercial musicals, you know, but I just didn't feel like I wasn't super passionate about them. And I wondered, well, why can't these musicals tell the stories that I feel that need to be told, right? Stories that included Indigenous perspectives, stories about what it's like to live as an Indigenous person within this, you know, country of Canada, and that felt very contemporary. We have a very, you know, unique perspective that I felt is so dramatic and so new and exciting, but yet the stories that were being told didn't reflect that. And so I realized as I was starting to question that, that in order to be the vehicle for the kinds of stories that I wanted to see in the world, I would have to write them myself. And so that's where I started to basically learn how to write. I'd always composed and always written music, so that all kind of came as second nature. But then I learned how to write plays, and then I learned how to direct plays. And then now I'm on my fifth musical that I've done, and that one of them is going to be shared at Transform, called On Native Land. So, so I've kind of learned over the years how to do that.
Yeah. So it seems like, you know, stuff like this, like new plays where there's a different perspective, a different story being told, they always come from a place of need where people see that it's not being told. So why am I waiting for others to do it when I can do it myself? And I think that's it's really incredible that you took that step yourself and, started doing it, and you're on your fifth musical, which is amazing. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I wanted to ask you, you are so kind of in line with what you were talking about on why you started to write. You're also, as you mentioned, you're the curator of Transform, co-creator of it. You founded Raven Theater. You're the artistic director of Urban Inc. So creating these organizations, spaces, did these come out of a place of need as well, where you didn't think you would be able to achieve what you achieve with existing theaters or festivals, or was it a different journey? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, what a great question. I think each of them have a bit of a different story behind them, but different backstory. When I started to want to create shows and musicals, like I was talking about, I realized very quickly that I needed a company to be able to do that. And so that's where Raven Theater started, was basically through it was very much like a grassroots organization, something that still exists to this day as being a place for that experimentation and creation and research to happen, which I'm very, very I'm very grateful to be able to have that kind of support. When it comes to Urban Inc., that's a company that was founded in 2001 by Marie Clements. And so I'm actually the third artistic director of Urban Inc. So after Marie, it was Diane Roberts. And then I took over from Diane Roberts. And I've been there for, this is my 10th season. So it's been a while. I've been there through all the growth and then also downturn from COVID, and then now the rebuilding of basically trying to get work out there again in the way that we had been doing before. So Urban Inc. is a company that isn't solely focused on me. It's focused on many different artists and many different perspectives, and really looks at both Indigenous and culturally diverse stories and how those stories intersect. And so the umbrella of work and of possibility is quite a bit greater. And that's always so exciting to me, is figuring out how can Urban Inc. be a vehicle for other artists. And so that's where Transform Festival came out of, is really trying to create more opportunities, because I think me and my co-creator and co-founder of the festival, Heather Redfern at the Kulch, really realized that there was a gap in the kinds of stories that could be existing on these stages. Not every artist wants to create musicals. Not every specifically Indigenous artist wants to create, quote unquote, like professional theater. A lot of Indigenous artists are working in all sorts of different formats, and we felt like there needs to be a place for that to exist and for that to be possible. And so that's where Transform Festival came out of, was really finding a way to encourage collaboration between Indigenous and non-Indigenous artists, whatever they were bringing to the table, and also to really blow the roof off of the kinds of artists that that could include. So we have circus artists, we have drag artists, we have musicians, we have theater, we have dance. And by encouraging that collaboration between artists, that's where we found some really extraordinary and exciting new performances that really people can only see at Transform. Like, there's not a lot of other avenues for this kind of work to be out there. And so, yeah, so that's I think part of the calling card of the Transform Festival, is just that there is nothing else like it.
And what is the process of finding these acts, these artists for the festival? Do you do a call out, or do you?
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. we do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Reach out to the artists yourself. How does that work?
It's different for each artist. Every artist has a different experience of how they become a part of the festival. Some artists, it was through open call or submission of them getting in touch. And then other ones, it's people that we've had our eye on and have wanted to include in some way. And then other ones, it's really where they have a unique collaboration that they're wanting to do, and then we find a place for them to be able to do that as part of Transform. So it really is it's a variety of different ways, but I think that's important because in terms of trying to be accessible and trying to be more inclusive, I think that you have to be a little bit more flexible to the different ways that artists may want to engage with a festival. And I always say, you know, Transform is really about supporting the artists and the process first, and then giving the audience a chance to engage with that, whatever that means. So, for example, there's some work that's in development, that's being created, that's going to be, you know, a testing phase. And I think that's really important to not always see the work that artists do as being this finished, complete, everything's packaged, you know, ready to go. It's like, I think there's a lot of beautiful complexity that exists within the gray area of creation.
Yeah, and talking about that, so your musical that you will be showcasing for this festival, it's actually a workshop. So this is more in line with, you know, giving an opportunity for the process as well. Do you want to tell us what On Native Land is about and what this workshop will entail?
Well, On Native Land is a very, it's a piece that's still in development. So the script is written. There's a number of musical pieces that are written, but we'll have a full cast. All of them will have learned the music, but it's a chance for us to experiment and to put things on their feet and to share it and to really begin a dialogue with the audience around the work. The whole show is about land and how land relates to Indigenous identity, and how so much a part of what Indigenous people are fighting for is the protection of land, and how that goes so far back. So there's a story inside of it that has to do with an Indigenous lawyer fighting for traditional territory, fighting for her community, and coming up against what a lot of the system that's in place, especially around the legal system, that is a very colonial mindset, of course, and trying to work within that as an Indigenous person. And then similarly, an Indigenous pop star has, you know, an ascent to success and to stardom, but that success is paired with a dissection of their Indigenous identity by the media and by the public, who all have an opinion about who they are, whether they are Indigenous enough. And that is really toxic for their own sense of self and for their creation and for like how they are able to write and to continue being an artist. And so both of those stories kind of experience a drastic decline, and then how the conclusion of the story comes is for the audience to get to see. But it sets up a really, I think, complicated story for contemporary Indigenous people that so far in our process has been really interesting to see how that story has touched so many different people. And also how that doesn't only impact Indigenous people, but it impacts so many different people, queer people, you know, people, different people of color who also have experienced that in relation to the questionings of their identity related to their culture. So it's been fascinating. And it's something that I'm excited to sort of open that up to a broader audience who aren't in the process to get a sense of whether that resonates with their experience as well.
That sounds, to be honest, very intense, but in a good way.
It's very intense.
Yeah. And talking about identity, do you ever struggle with your own identity when it comes to your ancestry and your heritage? And secondly, has creating art helped you in that in either finding an answer, or if you can't, if it's not something that you can find an answer to, in making that a little bit of a problem or a burden for yourself and kind of lightening the load.
Well, that's, yeah, I think it's different. I think there's all different ways that people feel either connected or not connected to their identity that sort of changes on different days and different, it's not a linear journey. And I think that really this piece came out of a feeling of a lot of noise and a lot of complexity around the way that specifically non-Indigenous people were engaging with Indigenous identity, whether that's in the media or whether that's in like communities. And I felt like I wanted to be able to offer something that was properly framing the complexity around this issue. And that was looking to engage with it in a careful, sensitive, and complex way. And that I think it's hard to answer that question without going into the history of colonization and the history of this land and how that is still, all of that history is still playing out to this day. And so this work on native land is a way of capturing all of that, laying out all of that complexity, and then the end and the conclusion of it, which I won't go into, but really is my offer to I would say Indigenous people, young people who are struggling with these issues, and letting them know that they're not alone, and the what they're living with, the complexity of living on this land, is difficult, and that of course that will have challenges. But to not become jaded and to not basically let that darkness in and let that suffocate you. So the show also deals with drug abuse and deals with suicide. And so when I'm approaching it, I don't want to be glib about any of these issues because people have felt these things so deeply that they felt that they couldn't carry on. And so in approaching the topic, I felt it was important to hold space for how this dissection has actually been toxic for Indigenous communities. And that it's not solely non-Indigenous people engaging in that discussion. It's also Indigenous people for sure. But that it has like real world implications that are, devastating. And yeah, it's hard to talk about it. And I think that's part of my process is that when I take all that in, it becomes overwhelming. And I also both have felt it personally, but also felt it with friends and family and people who have struggled with this in so many different ways. And so the work is hard. The work is hard, but it's necessary. And hopefully, if I'm doing my job right, and if this show is really telling that story with a depth that I hope it does, that it will offer something of hope for the future for Indigenous people that this is only for a time and that everything within ourselves is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And that nothing about them is wrong because of how the media or how, any community has dissected them.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, you worded that so perfectly. I have nothing to add. So another work of yours that will be showcased as part of Transform is In Spirit alongside Russell Wallace and Alexis Vollant. Yeah, can you talk a bit about that?
Well, In Spirit is it's a concert that I've been dreaming about for so many years. It's basically it began Many years ago, when Corleone approached me to sing a song, they wanted to sing a song from a musical that I wrote. The musical is called Children of God, and the song is called Gimmequendina. And so they brought me in, and I taught the song to them, and we all had it arranged, and it was so beautiful. And they've since gone on to sing this song all around the world. In so many different places. And many people have been introduced to indigenous culture, indigenous drumming through this song, through getting to sing this song. And same with another choir that's singing called Vancouver Youth Choir, who also did a similar thing with another song that I wrote called Cold Isn't Permanent. And there's never been a time where we've been able to come together and celebrate that good work that these two different choirs have done. Because it's not just the work that they've done with me, but also, like you were saying, with Russell Wallace, they've done a piece, many pieces of his, and also Alexis. So it's a very exciting time to get to kind of create this event where all this work that's been happening around the world has been witnessed by so many people, but really never all together here in Vancouver. So that's exciting. And then also it's paired with National Day for Indigenous Veterans. And so it's a chance to be able to share these songs and to share this work and also honor Indigenous veterans. So we have a song that's going to be performed by Russell Wallace called Forgotten Warriors. It's performed by Corleone, but it was written by Russell Wallace. And it's precisely about sharing the efforts and the perspectives of First Nations and Indigenous soldiers who fought in wars, who are not often given a same sort of recognition of their contributions. And so really, we're really excited to be able to hold space for that at this concert on November 8th.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I feel like probably, most people have heard of like Veterans Day, but most probably don't know that there's a Indigenous Veterans Day, and it's really important, as you said, to shed a light on that and tell the story of those, well, not necessarily tell the story, but remember those who are often forgotten.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to talk about Les Filles du Roi, because both sounds and looks really interesting. The fact that this was a stage production, which then was turned into a movie, and it's been, being shown internationally, which is really cool and also important. So first of all, do you want to tell people what this is about? And then I'll get into my questions.
Yeah. Well, we've been writing this story since 2014. So it's been 10 years. So a long journey. Julie MacIsaac, who's my co-writer of the musical, she approached me and she wanted to write about Les Filles du Roi. And we immediately thought, well, we want to be able to ensure that we're really challenging the status quo and trying to think about, well, what would that have been like to arrive here? We know that Turtle Island was populated by millions of indigenous people, and so they weren't just arriving to barren land. This was populated with cultures and languages, and so we felt like that alternative history needed to be understood. And as we did our research and as we went into many different communities and talked with people, we discovered that actually a lot of French people had married indigenous people, or for various reasons, and so we felt like that could be the basis of our story. And so the story is told through the perspective of a young Mohawk girl named Gaderlee and her brother Jean-Baptiste, who are going to the French fort in New France, which is now Montreal. And it's all about kind of unexpected surprises, unexpected friendships, unexpected loves, unexpected ways that they as humans interact and connect, but that are sort of taught to them as being, oh, well, you would never have anything in common with that person. And so, yeah, and then from there, I started to write music, and then Julie and I wrote lyrics, and we developed the show over 4 years, premiered it in 2018. And then we had the plan to tour the production all across the country because we had developed the show with the Native North American Traveling College in a reserve called Akwesasne that borders New York State, Quebec, and Ontario. And so we worked over many years, probably 2 years, with a group of Mohawk speakers, Kanyengeha speakers, on the dialect and the language. And they supported us with the translations, but also with the coaching. So we went to the Native North American Traveling College with our cast and crew members for them to actually take language lessons to learn the language with an elder there, Elder Mabel White, Yawendas. And it was extraordinary. And so we produced the production. We had the best time. It was really a really special time. And we had planned to tour it. And then COVID hit. So basically when the pandemic hit, like, we couldn't do the tour. And so basically we asked the funders if we could take the money that we had raised for the tour and adapt it into a feature film. And so that's what we did during the pandemic, is we shot this film. And turns out, because most of the film takes place outside, it was the perfect film to shoot. It was the perfect production because, while other film sets in Vancouver were being shut down because of outbreaks and all sorts of things, us being outside and in the woods for several weeks was actually the best place to be. And so we just had a wonderful time, and we learned so much. And it was just such a wonderful experience. So that was just the shooting. And then when we released it, it's just been extraordinary to see where it's gone. It's played internationally in Greece. It's played all across the States. It's played in Canada, many places, part of the TIFF film circuit. And it's won so many awards. It's been just extraordinary. And so it's been amazing to see how far this story has gone, which, of course, right, that's what film does. It has the power to, like, just reach into so many different communities that sometimes theater struggles to, because of, whether it's population or just capacity to tour. It's been a real gift to see how far and wide this film has gone.
Yeah, that sounds, I mean, the process itself, that sounds amazing. Must like a such a unique experience. And it's amazing that you mentioned it was shown on in Greece. That's like so cool, extending the conversation to, over that side of the world, because people don't really know about the colonial history of Canada in that side of the world. As someone, I'm Turkish, and like when I moved here, that's when I started to learn and find out about the history of Canada, because we're not taught about that in school. We don't talk about it outside of school either, and so that's such an amazing opportunity for your film to be able to, start something there, even if it's just a conversation between friends, being like, "Hey, did you know about this?" That's so cool. And I have a question about the adaptation itself. So because you worked both on the stage production and the movie itself, so you were there for the adaptation process. Oftentimes, I feel like, especially lately, when stage productions are adapted into movies, it's kind of disappointing because the original, like the people who are more well versed in stage productions aren't involved in the movie, and so the director doesn't really know how to direct musicals or stuff like that. But as the creators, and also as someone who has experience with stage productions, being there for this adaptation, what was that process like for you in terms of the actual adapting process? And what was important to you to keep the essence, I guess, of the stage production in the movie?
Well, I know that when we started to approach it, we didn't just want to do We didn't want to put a camera in a theater and just film the stage production. We actually wanted to do a true adaptation and do our best to really find the ways that film was able to capture the intimacy of a story and not solely focus on what had worked on the stage production, like you said. So I think we looked to do that in so many different ways. And what was offered to us was, like I was saying about the land, was that when you're in a theater, you have to, have beautiful backdrops or cutouts that give you the shape of the land and the horizon. But when you actually get to show it, is a really special and unique thing, and something that I think both in terms of its grandeur, like being able to see the St. Lawrence and to see the waters that these people would have been seeing when they were traveling up and down the shores, was something that was not possible to us in the theater. And then additionally, in terms of the inner life of these characters, there was an intimacy that was offered that on stage you would have to write about it, or you'd have to have a moment of expressing that. But in film, you can just have the camera capture it, and it's a subtle, simple moment that translates and is able to tell that story of a character in ways that, on stage it's not quite as clear. And so we found so many different ways to nod a tip of the hat to the theater. So, like, for example, in the film, we had a number of moments where when we go into a dream sequence, or we go into a prayer, or all sorts of different elements like that, where it's a character's imagination or inner life, we actually set those in a theater. So it's this black box space. It's a memory space where you're unsure if that thing that you're seeing is true, or if it's a fabrication, or maybe exaggeration of some sort of memory, where, like, when you're dreaming and you sort of you remember it, but you're not sure, like, is that, was that person there? Was that, why was it set? It looked like my house, but it was a little bit different. It's like things were a bit off. And I think that's sort of the feeling that we were going for in some of these moments, where of course we're seeing familiar characters and able to share that history and that story, but what are ways that the character would have been experiencing that? And so that was really a pleasure to get to explore. And also, it was something that we were very fearful about when we were creating it, because film is much more literal in terms of when you are in a coffee shop. Immediately, just saying a coffee shop, and you see what that coffee, you can think of any film or TV that you've seen that's a coffee shop. And so when we had something like, oh, they're on a ship, everyone can imagine like what that is. But we were trying to break that, and we were trying to make that space a bit more malleable and flexible. And we were worried that audiences wouldn't take that leap with us, or that it would take them out, or make them feel like that it didn't live up to what they had imagined it would be because of the like realism. But in fact, a lot of audiences have told us that that was actually some of their favorite parts. And so that's really satisfying to know that that same skill that we have in the theater of imagining and really not necessarily being as literal is something that, film audiences were excited about as well.
That's so interesting. And is the movie like available to watch anywhere? Can people watch it if they want to now?
It's still in the film festival circuit. We're still in film festivals, I think, until the end of this year. And then we're going to be having a wider digital release. And we're trying to get it into schools and to all different places. So, so make sure to check lesfilmsdetroitfilm.com, and that has all of the upcoming screenings over the next few months.
Cool, I love that. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about Transform before we leave. So, very easy questions could be difficult, depends on how you interpret it. First one is there an event that you personally are excited to see attend?
Oh, I feel like every time I've talked about them, there's something different that's exciting to me. So what is the most exciting is I always know that the opening bash is always a really great time because it's so different. There's drag, there's music, there's dance. We have Canada's Drag Race season 4 winner Venus, who is hosting with our protocol keeper, Jolemia Sparrow. But also we have an Inuk, they're a throat singing, like electric band called Pilk Silk that are performing. And so even just that, right? Having a band like that juxtaposed with like a famous drag queen, like a two-spirit Indigenous drag queen, feels like what a cool mix, what a cool like just a juxtaposition of like contemporary sexy fun with like also really interesting and like eclectic musical like genre that they're kind of making their own genre. It's so exciting. So I feel like part of what I enjoy is seeing how those play up against one another. And then also we have, I don't know if you've ever heard of Notorious Cree. So he's this amazing powwow hoop dancer and has like 1.2 million followers on Instagram and is very, very popular online. And he's actually going to be collaborating with a circus artist as part of our opening bash. So it's something where I feel like it will be something that no one has ever seen before and is only possible to see it transform.
Sounds so fun. When is the opening bash specifically? And also, when is the festival and where can people get tickets?
Yeah, so the festival runs from November 6th to November 9th. And it's going to be at the Vancouver Playhouse downtown. You can get tickets at transformfestival.ca. And yeah, every night is just going to be a really unique, fun time. And I also feel like as you look through the different events, like whether it's that you want to see circus or drag or music or theater, there really is something for everyone. So it's based on people's taste. Whatever you're into, there will be something for you.
Amazing. Is there anything you want to talk about or mention before we go?
No, I feel like this was such a wonderful conversation. I'm so grateful that you had me on your podcast. It's so great.
I feel the same way. Thank you so much for coming on here. It was lovely chatting with you.